welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 251 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal, Sean Orford. You all right, Sean?
I'm good. I'm now the recycle man, so there you go.
Recycling my Nespresso pods. Good, very good of you.
Yeah, I am. I'm good to
you. The least you could do, eh?
Yeah. Saving the environment.
Yeah, one pod at a time.
Ed's Nespresso pod.
I'm trying to get back into the Nespresso game. Okay, I've had this, one of the simple little espresso machines for a while, and I didn't use it for probably about a year, so I've just descaled it and got back in the swing, and I'm going to bring it in the office actually so I can have a little shot.
Apparently because they've run out of their patent on the pods, everybody's producing them.
I've seen you can get knockoffs. Are they as good?
I haven't really tried that many.
But
you can get them anywhere, Waitrose, Aldi, anywhere. They're doing them now.
Cool.
So let's try them and see.
Well, maybe we'll do a Nespresso episode at some point. But
sponsored by Nespresso.
Yeah, it's not going to be quite as cheery this week. We're talking about male suicide, actually, which has been in the news a bit this week and is a campaign on the go. But we'll keep it cheery, we'll keep it chirpy, and there's some important stuff we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
Statistics are pretty horrendous, to be honest, so we'll crack on with that in a bit. Liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. If you're new to the show, take a look. Find out all about myself and Sean and Ree, the most important member of the team who never comes on the show but keeps us in check. All the show notes from this week's show and all previous episodes are available there too. And if you sign up to our email list, you'll get some free meditation files, you get a discount code for our book, and you get weekly alerts for the show as well, so not too shabby.
Yeah.
Excuse me, bit of a tickly cough. But how have you been, Sean? All well?
Yeah, I am good. I am good. Life is amazingly busy.
Same here, man. It's gone a bit nuts for me the last couple of weeks, actually.
What we've done is this week, I've been off Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I will be off.
Off. Okay.
So it was actually meant doing things around the house and the garden and stuff like that. But it's been okay. It's been good. So we've been off together. So it's been like having a bit of a break.
But is your phone buzzing the whole time? And people need help, don't they, man?
It is sometimes, yeah.
You're your main point of contact for a lot of people in need.
And I do respond when I need to. Not least of all to things like what we're talking about today, when I have people that are on the suicide risk list.
Yeah.
And if things are kicking off, then it's a case of needing to respond pretty quickly, you know.
Yeah, I bet. Well, we'll come on to that in a bit. But, I've had a tough week as well. I mean, busy with work and life's cool. I won't go into details, but, there's a little lad who we knew from school and who passed away last week quite very unexpectedly. Basically, a routine operation gone wrong. So trying to process that personally, obviously, for the family, it must be absolutely horrendous. But trying to tell our two little boys who knew the lad well.
Yep.
And explain to them what's gone on and crazy. But a proper eye opener to how fragile our existence is.
And did you know the little boy?
Used to see him two or three times a week, either on the school playground or picking up my lads from the childminder. So a lot of stuff to process there, really. It's really raw. It's only happened quite in the last few days that we've found out.
I think one of the things that's really, really tough, and I get it a lot in different situations with people of different ages, is we do so many operations now on people that inevitably there is an amount of things that go wrong. And the more we do, the more things go wrong. And it's easy to feel bad about the services that we have. And yet the services are amazing, the things that they do. You know, and we need to deal with the losses that we have, but also celebrate what we have is good.
Definitely, proper eye-opener and make sure.
And so hard for the parents.
Yeah, well, we didn't know the parents very well, really. I'd met them a couple of times just in passing and said hello, but we'll see what happens, and I'm sure there'll be some kind of action and inquest and also maybe charity stuff and, you know, memorial-type things. Really sad, but, let's crack on with this week's show, which, isn't that much of a cheery topic either. But I saw on the news just a couple of days ago about the, there's a campaign, what's it called, I've stuck it in the show notes, project84.com, and at the ITV studios in, I assume they're in London. They've basically put these 84 statues of men up on the top of the building, kind of overlooking the precipice, because the statistics show that 84 men a week commit suicide
in this country,
in the UK, which is a crazy number, really. And I believe I'll link to the ITV article and the website as well, the campaign website, that the majority are under the age of 45.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about
the younger people, we'd say.
Yeah, we'll talk about the issues why around it, but quite a hard hitting campaign. Project84.com is worth checking out. So let's talk about it. Hey, I mean, have you got much experience? How often do you get the call, or the people you're working with?
I deal with two or three a year usually.
I'm guessing. No. I've sort of experience in this area because a friend of mine, her husband, committed suicide about a year ago, just over maybe, and there was no sign of it whatsoever. I mean, looking back, my friend kind of can see that perhaps, you know, he was quiet for a while, he was going to bed early, he was very lethargic and tired. We actually didn't leave a note either, so there was no explanation really. But I guess with people you're dealing with, they've already gone to get that help in the first place. So that,
well, no, it depends. Sometimes when I say I'm dealing with things, very often I'm dealing with the aftermath.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the people that are dealing with picking up the pieces?
Could be anything from the family or the partner or the person who discovers the body through to the emergency services.
Yeah.
And it depends on how the person chose to commit suicide, because sometimes it can be quite graphic and quite horrible.
Yeah.
And then you get the post-traumatic stress in people from that.
Yeah, I bet. Oh, man, it leaves a whole mess of things behind, doesn't it? Depending on how you choose to do it.
Yeah. And as a therapist, inevitably at some point a client will do it. And I've had that a few times over the years. And then there's always the issues for the professionals is, did we do enough? Did we do it right? There's all those kinds of ramifications as well.
Yeah, a bit of soul searching and what have you.
Mm.
So let's take a look initially why males under the age of 45 are more prone or more likely, or men in general. What is it in society and the way that we're living that is causing this relatively high statistic? There are other countries where it is higher, actually, which we'll come on to in a bit.
But if you look at this, I've just called this up. This is the 25 highest suicide.
Oh, right, rates, okay. Right? I wonder what you're looking at these flags for.
The UK doesn't even appear in the top 25.
So we're actually doing okay, really, then?
Well,
ish.
If 84 a week is doing okay, you know, maybe any is not okay. I mean, we're focusing on men. But it's important to realise that in most countries, the majority of people that attempt suicide are women. It's not just that men are more successful at it.
Okay.
Because they use more violent methods, you know, shooting, hanging, cutting. Whereas if a woman takes medication, then the chances are that she's either going to vomit it up or she's going to be found
and treated
takes effect.
And given another chance at life.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, we don't have to focus on just men in this show, but I mean, looking at kind of the pressures that modern men and women can be put under financially, in terms of family and just the amount of stuff that everyone has going on in their lives, I take it that's part of the reason.
If you look at whatever the reason is, in most cases, what it means is that the meaning of life has gone. You get to the what's the point?
Yeah.
Yeah, now that could be what's the point because I'm being bullied. It could be what's the point because I've got enough physical prowess, I haven't got enough money, I haven't got enough status, I haven't got a position. You know, there's no point in me being alive anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something that having a religious belief is something that is really good for. You know, people that have religious beliefs about, you know, life, death, you know, the meaning of life changes, and there is something about the religiosity that can be quite a protective thing when it comes to suicide.
Well, we don't need to focus on this too much, but there is a certain brand of person that will commit suicide in a very violent way and take out people with them because they see it as the ultimate religious act of, I don't know.
Well, we've just been in a position where Robert was caught up in the French
thing.
Yeah, he was there at the time. And the guy...
In France, not in the supermarket.
When he was at, what happened was the police that got shot and where the car got stolen was just by the hotel. And when they would, because they were on placement in the school, so they would walk past when the guys were jogging by. And it was just because it was Friday that they were on the plane coming back, in theory, that they weren't there. Or so they would have been there as the guy stole the car, shot the two passengers, and then took out the copper. And then they, by the time they did manage to get to the hotel, it was on lockdown, so they couldn't get out for another 24 hours.
Huh.
You know. But the guy that was in the supermarket, he ended up, was that a suicide? He ended up putting himself in a position where the authorities had no choice other than to take him out, really.
Yeah.
And to me, that probably was a suicide in that sense. It was a deliberate act.
Yeah.
And he knew his life would end in that.
Yeah, for sure.
But then he was doing it because he believed in something.
Mm.
And that's the other side of the coin, isn't it? It's like most people commit suicide because their belief in things has gone.
It's vanished, and they see no other way out or no hope.
But if you believe that in dying for the cause you're going to be rewarded in a heaven or wherever you'd go, then there's maybe a lot of incentive to act in certain ways if your belief structure takes you to that point.
Yeah, putting those guys and girls aside then, I mean, for the people who are thinking of ending it because they have no other route to go down, like financial obligations are just weighing so heavily on them. For the example I've had in my life where my friend's hubby ended it, there were no warning signs at all, well, immediately, and there was no letter left, actually. But how can we... What are warning signs can we look for in a person that is showing none? How can we preempt all this stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've smiled at that because that is so hard.
People just really... Because this guy was, you know, he was out with his pals and his brother a few days before, just one of the lads, dropped his kids at school that morning, everything seemed fine.
But very often, the person in that position feels, and I'm not saying it is true of this man, but those kinds of things where the person feels they've got no control left over anything. And they feel helpless and worthless in that sense. So being able to take your life gives you a sense of control. That may sound mad, but it gives you a sense of control and power. So that to then go and organise it, and maybe it could have taken them several weeks to set it all up, and they've effectively gone around and done some version of saying goodbye to everybody in their own way. Drop the kids at school, everything's fine, and now they go and do it. And very often, that kind of person has been planned for a long time in advance.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, there's a list I took from a website. In fact, it was that Project 84, or the calmzone.net, there's another offshoot from it, which lists some of the warning signs to look out for. And some of them do apply to my friend's situation, actually, in terms of looking back, she kind of realised that his mood was a lot lower for quite a long period of time, and he was very kind of going to bed early and really lethargic and tired, which, you know, for a dad of two young kids, as this person was as well, I'm tired all the time, man. Both of us were always shattered and going to bed early and just trying to get sleep as and whenever we can. So things like that are really hard to pick up on, really.
But then one of the things on that list is it said unexpected mood changes, including suddenly being calm and happy after being very depressed. Now, that describes what I mean about somebody who's been in the black pit and has decided that they want to end it, and now they feel in control. So they appear to be happy and calm, but actually they're designing their ending. But now they're actually, they've ceased to be a victim. They've taken control of something.
Yeah,
which it all sounds a bit back to front and inside out, but do you get what I mean?
I do, yeah. It's tricky, isn't it? Lack of energy, neglect of personal appearance. I need to shave, man. I'm a few days out. That's me again, flipping heck. Increased drug or alcohol abuse, I guess. Someone doesn't necessarily need to be, you know, all of a sudden a heroin addict. If someone's kind of having a greater reliance on alcohol throughout the week. It's not a healthy thing generally, is it?
Really? The thing is realising that both the alcohol and the drug in this situation is an emotional anaesthetic, so it stops the person feeling.
Just to numb things a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that stops the positive emotion as well as the negative. So it has a global effect, so the person can become withdrawn, disconnected, isolated, but they're okay in their own space because they're anaesthetised.
Yeah.
But the people outside may be able to see that.
There's a list here about giving away possessions, and I guess there's maybe clues late on that if someone's kind of seeming to get their affairs in order a little bit,
mm-hmm.
maybe, I don't know, going around, well, saying goodbye to people or doing certain financial things and getting a will in place, stuff like that.
Yep.
Maybe little alarm bells should be ringing. Yeah. Right, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is that it's usually only in retrospect that people say, oh my God, that person was saying goodbye, weren't they?
Yeah.
Because now they can see it.
Yeah.
It seemed like an odd conversation at the time. But
so, I mean, they're all things that can, little hints and warning signs, which they're quite vague, to be honest, and they could relate to a lot of people that. A lot of those relate to like how I feel a lot of the time in terms of fatigue and just general like running around like a headless chicken. So it's tricky, isn't it? But
do you ever get to the point though where that feeling of what's the point? Does that ever intervene? Because that's the key, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I would say no, because people aren't going to admit to this stuff, are they? Generally. So even if I was, probably wouldn't own up to it now and tell you. But no, I've never got anywhere near that point, really.
I in my darkest times, I did go through suicidal phases and did consider it very seriously.
Really?
As a kid, and then later in adolescence.
Is this also in your teenage years?
Yeah, and when I was quite heavy into drugs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there were times when it just seemed like it was all pointless. It was only when I discovered my, you know, Ramji and the ashrams, that life started to make sense for me. And then it had meaning. It never had meaning before that, really.
So people that are listening to this that are maybe, you know, teetering on the brink a little bit, you found your ashram and your that kind of spiritual teaching, but what can other people do to kind of find what's right for them?
I think the trick has to be that you go and talk to somebody. And that doesn't necessarily mean it has to be a psychotherapist. It doesn't have to be that kind of traditional, kind of authoritarian way of doing it. I mean, the results I'll put up is some contact numbers. But you need to talk. Because one of the things, because we're not good at talking generally, we tend to feel that our own experience is isolated, is ours. And it's only when you talk to other people that you realise that other people are feeling the same way. And that our feelings aren't unique and peculiar to us.
Yeah.
I reckon that probably everybody, and I mean everybody, even the Pope, at some point, has some level of suicidal ideation that it goes through their mind.
I mean, I've thought about it kind of just the practical side of, just out of interest and intrigue, like what route I would choose if it came to it, just because it's quite an interesting thing to think of. It's a bit bleak, obviously, and dark, and it's not something I like to discuss over the dinner table.
Yeah.
But there are a few.
Most people do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a case of any of us can be 20 minutes away from suicide. You know, it's the thing about, I've actually dealt with this kind of stuff. You know, someone is driving home from work and the fire engines are rushing past them and they have to pull out, let the fire engines go through. And by the time they get to their house, it's their house that's on fire. And their whole family's gone. You know, I've actually dealt with that.
Really?
And at that point, what is the meaning of life?
Mm.
You know, and it's easy when things happen to us. I mean, this poor couple that you were talking about earlier on, their belief in life, it will be, I suspect, pretty much shaken at the moment.
Mm.
And they'll have to do a lot of work processing all the stuff that's happening to them.
Yeah.
But when difficult things like that happen, and the meaning of life is gone, so you get to that, what is the point? Why am I doing this? Yeah. And I get that a lot in the workplace, where people are dragging themselves out of bed to go and do a job that they don't want to do.
Mm.
And from that point of view, yeah, what is the point?
Yep.
You know, so getting someone to a point where they are living something that is fulfilling for them gives their life meaning.
Yeah.
And like one of the keys to the whole thing is fun. You know, people, kids particularly, are good at having fun. Hmm. When they get into adolescence, it might get a bit tougher. But as adults, we're not good at just having fun. Hmm. You know, it all has to be organised. We can't just be it.
Yeah.
You know.
You have to schedule it in, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
For your fun slot on a Friday or a Wednesday evening, your fun slot is...
Yeah. I'm allowed to have fun because it's Wednesday evening. Yeah. Yeah, that kind of thing. Whereas in reality, life should be pretty good most of the time. Mm. You know, yes, as we say around these parts, shit happens, and it does.
Yeah, well, we talked about it last week, you know, so if you're new to the show and you're looking for a bit of help on how to find that fun and that woo in your life and what happiness really is, that's what we discussed last week, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's probably a good one to follow on with if you haven't already listened to it. Because, yeah, as we grow up, as we lose that ability as kids to have fun endlessly, we slip out of the habit, don't we? And we can forget what it is that we really want, I guess.
I think one of the problems in our society, and maybe globally, I mean, we were talking in the office a minute ago, weren't we, about the very high suicide rate in New Zealand, which is 5 times that of the UK.
Yeah.
And we're talking about 85 people a week in the UK.
Mm.
But a lot of those issues that they were describing were Maoris and the Pacific Island inhabitants, and looking at quite a macho kind of culture.
Yeah, well, this links in with quite a lot of work being done, actually, in terms of the crisis of masculinity at the moment, because the man's role has changed a lot in the last 20, 30 years, hasn't it, with more women coming into the workforce and expecting to, totally cool, obviously, but men feeling a little bit sidelined from certain things, or if a man is expected to do more childcare, I don't know, man, it's not something that typically over the years and generations men have got too involved with, is it?
No. And I wonder what effect the Me Too campaign is going to have on the male psyche, because if men have been seeing their roles in life and their position as being able to be dominant, and it is okay to be dominant with the women around them, and the women are saying, no, game over.
Yeah.
You know, does that put a lot more pressure on the whole kind of masculinity idea?
Mm.
You know, so if men are not in touch with their feminine side, as we'd say.
Yeah, where's that testosterone going to come from? All of a sudden, replacement? Or are we just going to, over generations, have to learn to, like, evolve away from that, and the kind of genders will merge a little bit more, which is probably what needs to happen, I guess.
But either that, or we get a reassertion of the testosterone-driven male ego, and do we plunge into another world war?
Mm.
That kind of stuff. So do we go for conflict rather than cooperation?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, we certainly seem to be heading down the conflict route at the moment.
We do, don't we?
But you can sense there's almost an appetite for it, you know, watching the news at the moment with all this Russia stuff and diplomats getting ejected. You can see that it's not necessarily the right thing to do to be aggressive and to, you know, try and wind another nation up that's got a bucket load of nuclear weapons. But then you can see the other side of the story, because we want our leaders to be strong, don't they? Because they're looking after our interests. So all of a sudden, Theresa May looks like quite a strong leader because she's got the support of all these other nations to eject diplomats and all that, and we're on a war footing, and we're ready for anything. Whereas it's not that healthy an attitude, really, is it?
No. No, but we human beings learn things slowly. Don't we? And my thing is, I really hope that we're not in for another world war.
Yeah.
I'm
not really up for that, to be honest.
No. No. So in terms of, we're both fellas.
Yeah.
If you had problems, would you go and talk to somebody?
Yeah, I would. I do. I speak to you every week. I'm quite lucky, really. I think I do. I mean, I would, and I do. This issue that's cropped up, you know, indirectly with the little boy that's passed away. I know we're obviously not in the direct line of fire, but we're all quite quick to kind of try and deal with it and speak to, obviously, our little boys and deal with ourselves and tell friends and family and try and process it that way and speak to the child mind that we know. And even at the school yesterday, the preschool that my kids go to, that the lad did as well. You know, I was speaking to the teachers on the doorway about maybe getting a little memorial set up, that kind of thing, and just trying. I know it's early days still, but I don't know. I feel quite conscious about trying to process it now rather than just getting on with it. If you know what I mean.
And processing is organic. You can't force the processing. You have to allow it.
Yeah.
To process through. And that's one of the things about when people do go through difficult times, and those difficult times may create a kind of suicidal feeling. Getting from the black hole back into the light might take a bit of time, and it's a process.
Yeah.
If people carry on working on it, and like I say, working with support, that they will most times come out the other side, but they have to keep going at it.
Yeah, well, we've done an episode on grief a few weeks ago, and it can take 2 years to process a death of a family member. I mean, I'm guessing longer, really, if it's such a child, someone that's taken away from you when they shouldn't really have been.
It can be.
It can take years and years, can't it? So just strap yourself in for the long haul, really.
Yeah, but the issue for us all of life and death is what's going on all around us. You know, we disassociate from it, and we assume in some level that we're all going to live forever. Mm. And in reality, it doesn't happen, does it?
Nope. No, it doesn't. We get these little wake-up calls every now and again.
Yeah.
I mean, you as a therapist, I believe that therapists are quite liable and kind of higher rates of suicide, potentially.
You get higher rates per capita of psychological workers than you do of farmers. That were very high.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have your monthly chats, do you, with another?
Yeah, I sit down every month for at least an hour and a half with someone else, and I just go, blah. Yeah, and they go, blah, to me as well.
Yeah.
And we look after each other. And that's our kind of professional relationship throughout the years. And if things go wrong, I'd ring them, they'd ring me.
Mm.
You know? So there is that safety mechanism built into what I do. And it's part of your registration. You have to do that every month to maintain your registration.
Okay, brilliant. Mm. I mean, I'm guessing if you're talking about fellas in general we're not good at talking about our feelings, are we? Like, if you go out for a drink with your pals or you meet up with the gang, it's not the done thing to kind of... I mean, we'll talk about issues in our lives, but we won't relate it back to ourselves necessarily and how it's affecting us. So you might say, oh, so-and-so's done this, or, oh, man, I've got this bill to pay, I'm not sure how, but you won't explain the feelings that underlie that and how you...
Whereas women are more likely to talk about what it feels like.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I find is that there's a male-female dynamic in therapy, that the majority of my clients are female. That's partly because the majority of work I do is in the NHS and the majority of the staff are female. But there's a male-female dynamic that works quite well. And very often men are much better at seeing a female counsellor, because they don't end up feeling so embarrassed if they get emotional.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
And if I'm seeing some pretty tough guys, either from the services or from, like, the police or fire services, stuff like that, it can be quite hard for them to unload emotionally to me, whereas to a woman it would be a lot easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, some guys are okay. But we us fellas have a lot to learn about how important it is to let go and process our emotions.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, a bit of
now, I don't know what's going on in New Zealand. I don't know why they've got the level that they've got, but I would suspect that it is based around that kind of male macho.
Yeah, well, it seems to be, yeah, the Maori's side of things especially do have really high rates. So maybe if you're a Maori who didn't make it, cut the mustard rugby-wise, and you're not, you know, 7 feet tall, with bulging arms, I think you're much more likely to have been bullied at school.
Yep.
There's a lot of family violence, like high levels of family violence over there, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting to study from our point of view, but a lot of work to be done there. But I think, you know, in the UK as well, we have this kind of grin and bear it, stiff upper lip mentality, don't we? Just to kind of...
Yeah, and very often as males it can feel like trying to support everybody else very often gets translated as I will keep it to myself so that I don't worry or get other people concerned. So it isn't necessarily a negative, it can be like a benevolent attempt.
Of not burdening someone else with your troubles.
But it's okay not burdening your nearest and dearest, as long as you are unburdening to someone else.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the bit that's important. And it's like the mindful or mindless approach. Like, to be mindless is just lumber on through it, or to be mindful is to actually pay it attention and do something with it.
Mm.
Yeah. Which is hard. Can be very tough, can it?
Okay. Yeah, definitely. Have you got a resource?
The resource that I put up here is at supportline.org. And what it's got is it's got lots of different services that you can contact for all different kinds of things, whether it's suicide, anorexia, AIDS, anything at all.
Right.
Massive resource.
Cool. Supportline.org.uk. Yes. Yeah.
So specific helplines designed for a particular issue.
Cool. We'll put that in the show notes. Mine is project84.com, which is the campaign to kind of highlight or raise awareness of what's going on in the UK, specifically around kind of male suicide. And then there's loads of resources on there in terms of things to look out for, how, you know, how you can get help, or how you can help someone yourself perhaps as well. So they're doing some good work, so take a look at that.
Yep.
Happy?
Good. Yeah. I think that's, it's a bit of a flattener to talk about this kind of stuff, because it is real and it is around us, and there is real, I'm dealing with death all the time in one form or another, and feeling other people's loss and pain is quite tough. It is the acceptance of there are people being born, there are people dying, and people when they die at an older age for us is usually more acceptable.
Yeah,
you know, we say they've had a good innings, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, you just need to... I mean, 84 a week in the UK is crazy. Just one, like, getting that number down by 4 or 5. You think about the ripple effect that happens when someone dies.
Yeah, it's 85 families, isn't it?
It can just spread. I mean, I saw it, and, you know, I've seen it at the school gates in the last couple of days. You know, people with some really grey faces, and just how far it can spread in a community. Mm. So if we can avoid even just a few of these each week, just to start with, it can make a huge difference, wouldn't it?
But that goes back to what I always say, if we all look after each other, we'll all be all right.
Yeah.
But all looking after each other also means that I have to allow people to look after me. I need to be open as well.
Right. Okay, well, we'll go back to the office, because there's three guys in their 30s and 40s there.
We'll go and check their okay, shall we?
Go give them a hug.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Cool. Livingthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links. There's a blog post from Sean as well to accompany this. And we'll be back next week, Thursday morning, with another fun-filled episode of the Self-Help Podcast.
Yeah.
See you later, Sean.
We will. You take care.
Bye.